dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. The Congress, of course, plays a very important role in that war, and I'm thrilled that we have with us a member of the House of Representatives who has until recently served on its Foreign Affairs Committee, notably its Asia Pacific Subcommittee, and is now a member of its Financial Services Committee, and in these regards has a lot of insights into a very important part of the war for the free world, as I think of it, namely Asia. He is Congressman Luke Messer. He represents with distinction the people of the 6th District of Indiana, and we're delighted to have him with us. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Glad to be here.
Congressman, let me start with a part of the world, as I say, that you've been thinking about and traveling in and responsible for in the Congress for some time, Asia. Japan, an important ally of this country, has been increasingly buffeted by aggressive behavior from China. Do you think that the kinds of responses that the Japanese have mapped out so far under Prime Minister Abe are appropriate under the circumstances?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think they are. We all recognize the structure Japan had after World War II, but I think circumstances have changed dramatically since that time, particularly with China's both increasing economic and military strength. I had an opportunity to meet with Prime Minister Abe when I was in Japan with my Foreign Affairs Committee colleagues and. In the spring, and he's very impressive. I agree with him on many topics. I don't agree with him on everyone, but one where I do is this question of Japanese security. They're talking about trying to have better self-defense forces, and in a world where China is saber-rattling in the South China Sea, increasingly making claims to both air and water waves in that region of the world, I think it's in Japan's interest, and frankly, it's in America's interest, too. I mean, as we've seen with some of the public debates and events in the Middle East, Americans are understandably war-weary, and I think that particularly on minor skirmishes, I have no doubt that in a major all-out war, America would rally and help Japan. But when it comes to issues that may seem minor from our shores, but not minor if you're Japan, they ought to have an opportunity to defend themselves.
And Congressman Messer, the point is that you want to prevent those skirmishes, don't you? You don't want them to begin because oftentimes they can unravel into something much, much worse. And I guess as you've traveled in the region and through your oversight in the Foreign Affairs Committee until recently, do you sense that the Japanese have come to be more and more anxious about the reliability of the United States as an ally, as a security partner in that dangerous part of the world?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that the failed leadership of this administration, the fact that they've drawn lines in the sand and then not enforced them, that the entire world is watching. And sure, the bad guys of the world, you know, Iran, North Korea, and others are watching, but our allies are watching too. And they understand that you know, at least under the leadership of this president, we may not be as quick to help. And you make an important point, Frank. I mean, sort of a fundamental principle of conservatism is the concept of peace through strength, that when you look strong, you avoid, when you are in substance truly strong, you avoid these kinds of conflicts. I mean, China is, you know, the sum of their more aggressive actions, and again, in the air and seaways of that region of the world, claims on lands that frankly are inappropriate. If they knew it might have real consequences, I think they'd be a little more reluctant to be so aggressive.
Yeah, and this is the problem. I think they perceive peace through strength no longer operates here, and it's a vacuum that they're going to fill aggressively if need be, through other means if not. Let me turn, if I may, to one of those other means that worries me a lot, Congressman Luke Messer of Indiana. You are, as I mentioned now, a member of the Financial Services Committee. It seems as though official Washington, including the Securities and Exchange Commission, has not given as much thoughtful attention to an incipient initial public offering of a huge Chinese internet provider called Alibaba, with ties to the Chinese government and therefore to the Chinese military, despite the fact that we're hearing a lot about Chinese hacking, about Chinese, cyber espionage, about their invasion of the privacy of American citizens and so on. This would seem to me to be something that we would not want to be encouraging, let alone enabling, by having them raise tens of billions of dollars in our capital markets.
I think we have to be very careful and mindful of the fact, as you've described well, Frank, that in a modern world, the weapons of your enemies are many. It's not just conventional weapons or even higher level military weapons. It's things like technological espionage, cyber espionage, using financial powers to weaken our country. And so in this ever complex world, we're going to have to be mindful of the actions of the Chinese. And this, as you've described, is something that we as Congress are going to have to step up and try to have oversight to make sure the American people understand what's truly happening.
Well, I hope you will, and look forward to supporting you in doing so. Among other things, as you know, I'm sure, Congressman Messer, the Chinese some years ago adopted a doctrine. They published it, in fact, something called unrestricted warfare, which lays out, I think, something like 20 different ways of waging war against the United States, authored by two senior People's Liberation Army colonels. It's a kind of roadmap for the sort of thing that you've just described, and I think we'd better be attentive to. And Congressman, let me turn, if I may, to another topic that I know is weighing on you, as it should be on all of us. I'm going to be speaking in the next segment with a former senior Israeli official, Lenny Ben-David, but I'd like to get your thoughts on what is happening in one of those other parts of the world, which, as you've indicated, is troubling, and that is the war that is really now being waged against Israel by Hamas, and how we are perceiving and behaving towards Israel's efforts to defend itself against them.
Yeah, I mean, one, America must always be clear that we stand with Israel. They are our most consistent and constant ally in that region of the world. I had an opportunity to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu last summer with a delegation that went to visit. He was very clear with us about the risks that Israel faces every day, but also their appreciation, the long-standing, decades-long appreciation of Israelis for America's support. You know, events of the last few days, I think we all need to understand their true historical, potential historical implications. You know, history doesn't come with neon lights like a bolo punch, and these sorts of things that may seem like they start small can end up much larger. That's why we can't let them escalate. I've also gotten to know Ron Dermer, the Israeli ambassador, and he's made clear, Ron, if you had a chance to meet him, grew up in Miami, but really a remarkable person, but Israel will defend themselves. And I believe, frankly, this administration hasn't been strong enough in its support for Israel. I mean, what happened with these young teenagers is an atrocity, but it ought not be something that escalates into, a region-wide war.
But I want to just, in closing, to ask you about whether you see a kind of parallel to the vacuum that you were recently just talking about, the Japanese sensing and the Chinese trying to fill. Has the Obama administration's mistreatment, I think it's a fair way to characterize it, of Israel caused, in your judgment, Congressman Messer, those in not only the Palestinian ranks, but probably others in the region to believe there's an opportunity to go at Israel now that didn't exist before?
I think absolutely. You know, there are, the history of the world shows that ambiguity can be dangerous. And when this administration has been ambiguous in its support of Israel, it emboldens Israel's enemies in that region of the world. I think we need to be absolutely clear in our support for Israel. And frankly, I agree with the Prime Minister and Ambassador Dermer and others who've condemned the attack on the young Palestinian child in Israel as well. But we need to let everyone in that region know that we'll be standing with Israel in this conflict.
Yeah, and the most important reason is because their enemies are our enemies, it turns out. So if they're strong and able to help contend with them, we'll be better off as well. Congressman Luke Messer, thank you very much for your service to our country, sir, in Congress, and for your joining us today to talk about a couple of the critical issues that you're covering. Keep up the good work, sir, and come back to us again very soon. As advertised, we'll talk with Lenny Ben-David right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
Hello, I'm Gary Sinise. It's been 20 years since Forrest Gump, and the story of Lieutenant Dan's triumphant return to normalcy is still a part of my life. I'm honored to share it with the real-life Lieutenant Dan's living among us, the more than 1,700 battle-injured amputees that have returned home since 9/11. As citizens, it's our duty to ensure these heroes get the care they need. Join the Gary Sinise Foundation and help support America's wounded heroes. Visit GarySiniseFoundation.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
back, we're joined by Lenny Ben-David, one of the most thoughtful observers and former policy practitioners on matters involving Israel and its security. Lenny was formerly the deputy chief of mission, a number two position at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Today, he is the director of publications at a terrific organization in Israel, the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He is also a frequent contributor to the Jerusalem Post, and always delighted to have him with us here. Welcome back, Lenny.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
Well, there's so much to talk about, Lenny. Let's start with some of the musings that you have been doing on Hamas of late, specifically its efforts to sort of cast itself as the victim in the present, conflict with Israel. And as ever, to cast the loss of civilian lives to Israeli retaliatory action in a very different light than what it is doing to try to kill a great many Israelis with its rocket attacks.
Frank, this is one of the most audacious acting jobs that's been done on the international stage. Hamas presents itself as a people's army, is our people's movement. It is, for all intents and purposes, a real army that has been building itself the last couple of years with Iranian and Syrian assistance. The weaponry would make small countries look embarrassed by the sheer amount, the tens of thousands of weapons. We presume that much of Gaza today is a subterranean city, or considered a subterranean pentagon, with the communications and supplies and tunnels underneath. This is a well-greased army while their people are out there starving.
Speaking of the people of Gaza, one of the really stunning things that's come to light in the course of what has been called Operation Protective Edge by the Israelis is the evident direction that Hamas has given to civilians to go back into houses that the Israelis have noticed the population are going to be attacked. This is taking this whole idea of sort of human shields to an outrageous and truly inhumane new height.
The whole concept of war and this asymmetrical war that's going place is almost surreal. The Israelis permit food and water and even fuel into Gaza. And when they know of the presence of a terrorist in a building, they will warn that building with a phone call or with a low explosive device hitting the roof that we're coming. And it's to save lives. And then along comes Hamas and they say, no, we want human shields. It is, for those of your listeners who know the Bible, this is sacrificing children to the god Moloch.
Yeah, it is. Let me ask you about a couple of related questions. And again, our guest is Lenny Ben-David, now with the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. One of the things that is evident in all of this, Lenny, is that Israel, having relinquished Gaza a number of years ago at the direction of Ariel Sharon, in effect, created conditions that were predictably going to result in this kind of conduct. Do you think, in hindsight, that it was a mistake for Israel to relinquish this territory to what was almost inevitably going to be the tender mercies of a terrorist group like Hamas?
I think it was certainly a mistake, and certainly the way it was done, without guarantees, without third parties coming in. It also proved the absolute sheer folly of the concept of land for peace. There's no such concept in the Middle East. If they want your land, they're not going to give you peace.
And if you give them your land, you're not going to get peace. I mean, it's sort of axiomatic here. Now, this raises, of course, Lenny, the question that that has vexed many of us for quite some time, partly as a result of the policy predilections of our own government, notably under this administration, the administration of Barack Obama, but also, to varying degrees, the policies of your government in Israel, namely this notion that you have in Fatah, or the Palestine Liberation Organization, a partner for peace with whom land for peace deals can be made, if not with Hamas. What is so evident, Lenny, is, among other things, as a result of the superb work of Palestine Media Watch, Itamar Marcus's group, is the true character of Fatah and the kind of role that they're playing now in inciting violence against Israel, hardly different at all, if at all, from that of Hamas. Talk a little bit about that other dimension of the Palestinian cohort and whether you do, in fact, have a partner for peace.
Excellent questions. I suspect that many, many Israelis are now learning after the kidnapping of three young Israeli teenagers and then the barrage of missiles that we're receiving, that the idea of our peace, of making peace with our neighbors or land for peace, was purely imaginary or wishful thinking that has become our, many people's oxygen. They breathe this wishful thinking. And they now realize that they're paying the price. Indeed, it's a serious issue of whether or not the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas are partners for peace. Certainly when they partner with Hamas, it's hard to find that. And so I think we're going to see a very strong support for Prime Minister Netanyahu, strong support for military actions. And when Israelis hear foreign governments, including your own, calling for some kind of restraint, we laugh at it, and those calls and the statements coming out of some of your government officials are frankly irrelevant to the situation here.
Well, irrelevant, except I fear in that they may be contributing to some of the expectations that your enemies will either get away with what they're doing or what they aspire to do. And I guess, Lenny, this raises the further question. Do you anticipate in the near future that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be compelled to send ground forces into Gaza to really try to clean out these guys once and for all?
We've repeated this scenario several times, and each time it's harder to clean out the rat's nests. And indeed, I think there's a realization that we will have to pay the price, and unfortunately innocent Palestinians may pay the price, to once and for all get rid of these international terrorists who are affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. We've seen ISIS flags flying in Gaza recently. We don't want another Afghanistan on our border.
Right, and it seems in prospect, if not in place right now. Lenny Ben David, now with the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, thank you very much for your superb contributions, both to our understanding of what you're facing and, of course, to the need to support our friends in Israel. We'll look forward to visiting with you again very soon.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The idea that there is one set of laws everybody must abide by is a central precept of our republic. For over 5 years, however, as former federal prosecutor Andrew McCarthy has documented in his new book, Faithless Execution, President Obama has been selectively enforcing some laws and unilaterally modifying or dispensing altogether with others. This practice has, for example, encouraged an invasion along our southern border that is creating threats to public safety and the national security. It is provoking some Americans to consider enforcing the law themselves, risking a violent response from federal authorities and possibly a broader crackdown by Team Obama on our freedoms. One wonders, is President Obama trying to provoke such a fundamental transformation of the United States with his contempt for the rule of law? This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Bill Gertz. We take a tour inside the ring with him. That is, of course, the title of his prize-winning column at the Washington Times. He's also a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon and one of the country's preeminent national security journalists. We're always pleased to have him with us. Welcome back, Bill.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Well, as usual, you've been writing some very important stuff, Bill, about various threats and the failings of our government, it would appear, to address them properly. Maybe we could start with reporting that you did this week on two different new dimensions of the Chinese military buildup. One is involving something called scramjet technology, and the other, apparently, a frenzy with respect to nuclear-powered submarines. Talk about both.
Yeah, this is an important story. I reported in the Free Beacon this week that China is developing what is known as a scramjet-powered hypersonic cruise missile. This is the second new type of this ultra-high-speed vehicle. I reported back in January that they conducted a test, an actual test, of a glide vehicle, which the intelligence community believes will be used as a nuclear delivery system. In other words, it's a maneuvering nuclear warhead. This is a totally different thing that was revealed in a Chinese journal, which talked about developing a scramjet-powered hypersonic cruise missile. That is a jet-powered vehicle that travels at 10 times the speed of sound. Again, this looks, they included a line drawing in the journal. It appears to look very similar to a NASA Pentagon research program called the X-43 that was developed about 10 years ago. So it's not necessarily new, but it is for the Chinese, and it certainly represents a new level of threat as far as China's strategic program goes.
And, you know, Bill, I was talking earlier in the program with a congressman about the extent to which the Chinese have proven very adept at using things like information technology, hacking most especially, to our detriment. And this would seem to be another example of it. Is it your assessment, Bill, that the scramjet technology we developed has been expropriated by the Chinese through cyber espionage or other means?
I'm almost certain that that would be the case. We know that the Chinese have done extraordinary hacking of our government systems, especially NASA has been a target. Congressman Frank Wolf has been sounding the alarm about Chinese-directed espionage against the space agency, and it's almost certain that they were able to get at least some preliminary plans. In fact, my reading of this Chinese journal indicates that this is probably an assessment of the NASA scramjet-powered hypersonic vehicle, and that they're trying to develop it. This article just appeared recently, last year, actually, and so it's clear that they're, and it talked about developing this airframe and engine and integrating the two into a real system. So this seems to be more than just a theoretical writing. So it looks like they are working on this new system.
Yeah, and I, as I said to Congressman Messer, this is a problem because the Chinese are clearly bent on filling what they perceive to be a vacuum of power in the Western Pacific and perhaps beyond. And that leads into the other thing you've been describing, Bill, and that is their apparent determination greatly to expand their undersea fleet, the nuclear-powered component of which specifically, which represents a real threat to not just our forces and power projection capabilities in the region, but to commercial shipping and all manner of other things.
Yes, they are on a tear when it comes to developing new submarines. This is part of what the Pentagon calls China's anti-access area denial weapons. The Chinese are developing large numbers of submarines, including nuclear attack submarines. Two generations of them are online right now working to develop those, and they want to push the U.S. out of Asia with these submarines. Rick Fisher, a stellar analyst on China's military, uncovered what appears to be a mock-up of a new next-generation attack submarine called the Type 095, which was demonstrated online where a lot of secret Chinese weapons programs come out. And so now they have a Type 093, of which they have several of these online, two built, five more online, and now they're building this new Type 095, which represents a real quantum leap in their submarine capability.
Bill, one other aspect of the Chinese threat that I think you have again helped illuminate very importantly is something that came to light in the course of conversations that you reported on this week in your Inside the Ring column about the collaboration on countering global warming that apparently is giving the Chinese entree into our electric infrastructure and how it is designed and smart grid improvements to it and so on. Talk a little bit about the risks that are associated with that as you see it.
Yeah, Frank, this is a very significant story. This was in the Washington Times Inside the Ring column. Basically, they had their climate talks this week in Beijing, the most polluted city on Earth. They used their vague generalities, but one thing caught my attention in their statement about this, and it wasn't really outlined in detail, but Todd Stern, who's the special envoy for climate change, told reporters that they had agreed to cooperation on smart grid technology. This in the face of massive Chinese hacking of our energy systems going back to 2009. There has been intelligence reporting that the Chinese have broken in to our nuclear grid and mapped out this grid for attacks in the future. And here you have the Obama administration as part of their no enemies at all policy talking about cooperation with China on something that could have a major strategic impact on the United States. If we cooperate with China on this smart grid technology, it will give them insights into how to attack our infrastructure in a future crisis or conflict, and that's a real problem.
Well, Bill, as you say, it would be a major strategic challenge. It would actually pose, I believe, an existential threat to the United States were the Chinese, or for that matter, anybody else, to be able to use such insights to take down possibly permanently the electric grid of the United States. And you know, Bill, this is taking on particularly grave concern because we've had a report recently that something called Dragonfly, computer worm apparently derived from the so-called Stuxnet malware that the United States and Israel used against Iranian centrifuges and nuclear program some time ago, is apparently being insinuated into the control systems of electric infrastructure in this country and in Europe. And there's some thought that it's a Russian-sponsored operation, but there's also some speculation that perhaps it's a Chinese effort making it look like it's Russian. But either way, it particularly coupled with this kind of information, Bill, would be, I believe, very, very dangerous stuff to have in the wrong hands. Let me turn quickly to another subject that you've written about inside the ring, Bill, and that is, perhaps at the risk of stating the obvious, that there doesn't seem to be any Obama administration strategy for Iraq. What have you learned from listening to Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marty Dempsey, on that?
Yeah, those two officials briefed the Senate earlier this week and talked about what their plans were. Right now, they're doing assessments, and they have a number of teams assessing the capabilities of the Iraqi military and also setting up two operation centers should the president decide to use the military to go after ISIL, this terrorist group from Syria that has now taken over large parts of Iraq. Senator John McCain emerged from that and said, look, I don't want to discuss the details. Basically, those were the options that were laid out. But he said they have no strategy for dealing with this threat. And this is a real threat to the region and the world. It's been clearly identified that ISIL poses a threat to the region and as well as a threat to the United States in the future. This is a looming threat on the horizon. And yet the Obama administration, because it's so focused on being the anti-George Bush administration, has really totally neglected the security threats that are now emerging in Iraq.
Yeah, well, I would argue, Bill, that they've contributed materially to them by extricating all U.S. forces without regard for this absolutely predictable upsurge in violence and threats emanating from that territory to not just the region and our interests there, but to us here at home as well. Bill, thank you very much, as always, for this superb tour d'horizon of challenges we're facing. Nobody covers them better than you do at the Washington Times and the Washington Free Beacon. I hope you'll, needless to say, not only keep up that good work, but come back to us next week. And in the meantime, stay very well. We'll be talking with Fred Gedrick about the missile threat specifically and what we should be doing about it right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
This a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Gedrick. He is a man whom I've known for many years as a very thoughtful foreign policy and national security analyst with backgrounds in the Defense and State Department. A recent piece he wrote in the Washington Times caught my eye about the growing ballistic missile threat, and I thought it would be useful to have a catch-up with him. Fred, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Frank, delighted to be with you today.
Let's talk a little bit about this ballistic missile threat. It is something that I think most of us have not been paying much attention to since the end of the Cold War and the prospect of possibly thousands of ballistic missile-delivered warheads raining down on the United States in, you know, apocalyptic attack. How serious would you say the threat of ballistic missiles being used against our country, perhaps, or certainly our allies and forces overseas is at this point? And why do you say it's growing?
Well, I think there is a growing threat. The Missile Defense Agency suggested that by 2020, this threat is going to increase by approximately 20%. Among primarily rogue states, up to 8,000 missiles. The thing that worries me is taking a peek across the global landscape. You have rogue states like Iran and North Korea, untrustworthy regimes like China and Russia, and shaky governments like Pakistan to be worried about.
And to some extent, they are collaborating with one another to advance the state of the art. Notably, of course, Iran and North Korea are joined at the hip in the development of their ballistic missile programs. But they're benefiting, I think it's reasonable to say, from technology transfers and scientific inputs of other kinds from places like those you've mentioned. And Fred, I guess the question arises, is the only reason we need to be concerned about these the possibility that relatively short-range missiles might be used against, well, targets close at hand, perhaps in the case of an Iran, maybe it's an Israel or Saudi Arabia, for example? Or is there reason to be concerned that at least some of these missiles, even relatively short-range missiles, could attack targets here at home if they were brought here aboard ship?
I agree with you on that. I think that there is a serious threat out there, and we live in a world where danger lurks everywhere, and a single misjudgment or mistake could trigger a cataclysmic event. And there's a lot of hostile actors. And the U.S., I think the President of the United States and Congress, most sacred responsibility is to keep the nation's people safe. And in this case of missile defense, I think we've become a bit lackadaisical. And in my article, I cite one of the backbone of the U.S. missile defense system is the Army-Navy Transportable Radar Surveillance System, which has the capability to detect a baseball if one were deployed in New York City, it could see a baseball in Los Angeles. And the advantage of having such a system is to protect against launches and incoming missiles. Unfortunately, through sequestration and also foreign policy choices by the Obama administration, we've cut what the security experts suggest is having 18 down to 12. That's a one-third cut in today's environment, and I think that's a very dangerous situation for America to be in.
That's 12 of these transportable radars you're talking about.
Yes.
Let me come back in a moment, if I may, Fred, to a bit more detailed conversation about our missile defense capabilities. But just staying with the threat for one more minute, I mentioned this problem of relatively short-range missiles, perhaps even Scud missiles, of which there are thousands, as you know, around the world, being brought close to our shores and used perhaps to attack targets here or maybe to lob a nuclear warhead high over our country and generate something known as an electromagnetic pulse attack. This is a threat, the so-called Scud in a tub scenario is a threat that the EMP Threat Commission looked at some years ago and thought was a very serious problem. I'm reminded of this because we heard in a news report just yesterday, Fred Gedrick, that the so-called Islamic State has apparently obtained a Scud missile, I think from the Syrians. The regime obviously didn't give it to them. It was liberated by them. But there have also been reports that the Iranians have allowed through Syria Scud missiles to migrate to Hezbollah. These would all seem to me to be
reasons why we should be very concerned, not just about state actors and their malevolence, but the possibility that one or more of these countries, if they were able not only to get their hands on a ship and the missile, of course, but also a nuclear weapon, could be posing a very, very grave threat to this country as well.
Right. And in fact, over the past weekend, I saw a video of ISIS parading a Scud missile through one of the cities they had captured.
Fred, turning quickly, you've mentioned the radar, and it does seem to me that that's a very important ingredient in our defensive capabilities. But what's the current status of our ability actually, once a radar picks up information about an incoming missile, baseball-sized or otherwise, that we would have the capacity to shoot it down?
Well, I think there's an excellent chance to shoot it down. The systems we're using now has an excellent record in performing flawlessly. In its forward-based mode, this radar passes information on the command and control battle management communications element, and it uses other systems like the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, Patriot, Standard Missile 3, and Ground-Based Interceptor to destroy the threat during its ascent phase. In its terminal-based mode, it uses the PAD missile system to destroy the threat during its descent phase. That's why it's an integral and very important that we have enough of these systems in our inventory to protect America from ballistic missile threats.
Fred Gedrick is our guest. He is a very, very seasoned foreign policy and national security analyst with experience in both the defense and State Departments. And Fred, I guess I just to drill down on this, I think what you've said is true as far as it goes. We do have a number of systems that have been deployed mostly in forward positions. Those are sort of theater or tactical missile defense systems. But it seems to me that we are seriously lacking in terms of those kinds of interceptors that are appropriate to defending the homeland against particularly some of the longer range threats. Are we doing all we need to do in that regard beyond the radar question?
No, we're certainly not doing as much as we can. And frankly, I'm surprised at the level of opposition to protecting the homeland by some critics of ballistic missile defense systems in Congress and elsewhere, and possibly in the White House. I think we do need to do a much better job in protecting the homeland.
Well, we do, and I think over the years I've been fooling with this issue. I've been struck by the disconnect between the American people, who not only expect that our government is doing everything it can to protect them, as you say, but think that they have been doing it. And that disconnect has become more pronounced under this administration more than perhaps any, because to the contrary, it seems they're doing what they can to rip up our missile defenses by the roots. Fred Gedrick, this is a critically important topic. We're very pleased that you were able to share your insights into the need to address this growing ballistic missile threat and the ways to go about doing it. And I hope that you'll stay in touch with us as we work on this problem together to ensure that people are protected as they should be. Fred, we'll talk with you again soon. I hope we'll talk with the rest of you again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.